Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on Facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Well, hello everyone. Happy long weekend, and I'm so happy to have you here tonight. It's a very special night. This is Kim Justice. I'm your usual, for about 6.5 years now, Wednesday night host. I'm on every week on Wednesday night, but I had an opportunity with a host on vacation to notice that this was September 1st, which signals the beginning of Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month. Now, there's a lot of people out there listening, and there's a lot of people that are going to be participating tonight, some listening that never have had a brain aneurysm, but they've never even heard of it, like me. I never heard of it until I actually had one personally. And there's an awful lot of people out there, including medical practitioners, no pun intended, that God bless them, they save our life, and for that I am truly grateful. But they're not very good about giving us a heads up, if you will, about the residuals we may have to live with down the road. And we talk about silent epidemic, both in TBI, ABI, any kind of head trauma. Some people do have tells that they're left with, and others can walk, talk, look normal. And so the expectation for themselves and their loved ones is that they're going to go back to normal, much like a broken arm. You have it in the cast a certain amount of time, it's weak, you get some therapy, and there, you go back to normal and it's over with. And most of us find out the hard way over a period of time how that is really going to look for us. Most of us agree that our aneurysm experience was truly a game changer on our life path, our life's course. And tonight what I hope to accomplish is kicking off Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month with awareness. I've invited a group of people to come, and if you're out there and you didn't happen to catch the memo, you're free to call in too. The way I would like to start the show, for those of you listening, I got such an overwhelming response, and I really want to thank Rico. You can also look in my program notes. Many of you are probably listening because you clicked on a link that could be in any one of probably 30 different places, but in my program notes is a link to Rico's support page site, and it's wonderful. He's wonderful. Everybody in the group is wonderful, and they were so kind. I planted the seed that I would like to do this show, and people were so responsive that there was no way I was going to be able to individually interview everybody about their aneurysm experience. Some I'm going to be having back to do Were There the Dedicated Guest at a future time. Rico, he's been on as a featured guest before. Tonight what I would like to do is what I'm going to call a roll call up front first, because I know there's some people, it's when I booked this show, I wasn't thinking that it was a holiday weekend too, that a lot of people like our own Huskers, one of my first callers happens to be this area code, they're going to be off to watch the game. People are going to be off to do some things. And so what I'd like to do in the beginning is a roll call. I'm going to go down my switchboard, and I'm going to address you by your area code, so pay attention this time, because I'll write down your names as I go. But I will say your area code. I'll say you're on the air. And then if you will just introduce yourself, tell us your aneurysm date, and I realize some of you might have more than one, but tell us your aneurysm date. Tell us how old you were when you had your initial experience. And for example, my name is Kim Justice, January 9th of 1995. I had a ruptured brain aneurysm, and I had a clipping, a craniotomy, brain surgery with a clipping. And I'm one of those that I call a zipper head who has the C scar around their face. At the time that I had my experience, the choice was that procedure or death. In 1995. Since then, a couple other options for treating aneurysms, depending on the circumstance, have come out. So if you'll introduce yourself, give your aneurysm date, tell the age you were when you had your aneurysm, and a comment if it was a rupture, if it's a wait and see, if you were coiled. And we're just going to go right down the line. That way, anybody who has to leave, I appreciate you calling in tonight. You'll be able to go ahead and leave at that point. And anyone who wants to stay, just stay on the line. I don't usually unmute all the mics at the same time, or we get a lot of feedback. And I want to make sure during the roll call that everybody hears you, because this is a live show, but it immediately goes into archive, and that link that you clicked on is going to belong to this show forever. And so if you're doing any speaking, you want to pass something around a support group, you want to talk to your, whether you have a foundation or an alliance or whatever you might have, it's pretty cool that we're doing this show, and it'll be completed on the first day of the month, because you may want to share it with an organization that says that they're working for us. And this is Awareness Month, and this might be a tool that they can use in addition to everything else they're doing that is strictly from the survivors and or the caregivers. So we'll do that. And then when we get through the roll call, anyone who is left on the line, stay on the line if you'd like to have a discussion, take part in the discussion afterward. So the number is 424-243-9540. Again, 424-243-9540. And so I am going to start right up here at the top. Somebody I know is going to need to go, but it was a pretty funny surprise. Right when I logged in, the first area code that I saw happened to be my own area code. And so, funny, small world, I found out that this person just actually lives we live not that many miles away from each other. So it's kind of funny, since this show streams to all 50 states, about 47 countries. Our founder is in Spokane, Washington. Rico, where we started this, is in Cali, and that the very first caller I get would be someone who lives in the same thunderstorm that we're about to have. But I'm going to start there at the top, and again, let's do the roll call, and then we'll have a great discussion. Area code 402, you're on the air. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Nikki Turner, and I had a rupture, and they clipped it, and it happened on July 13, 2007, at the age of 44.
Okay, and is that your partner there, barking, rooting for the Huskers?
No, that was
my
dog. So
I got cats here.
Your cats are barking?
No. I don't have a barking dog. I had a cat.
That was me.
Oh, that was you. Okay.
That was me.
Who?
But no, yeah, thank you so much.
Oh, Rico, I didn't even know that your mic was on. Okay, Thank you, Mickey, so much. Enjoy, and thank you. Enjoy the game. We'll see if it gets rained out or not. It looks like we have a big thunderstorm that's going to be going on in our area. I've got my phone turned off, but I've got one of those apps that goes ring, you know, every time when there's going to be severe weather. It's going off like crazy. So
the rupture, that you could tell when the rain comes and the storms comes because your head hurt. Thank you so much for doing this.
All right. Thank you so much for calling in. Enjoy, and I'm going to put you back on hold. Feel free to come back. Otherwise, enjoy the game as long as it lasts. Okay, Rico, go ahead. Why don't you do the roll call?
Well, my name is Rico Principe, and I am an alcoholic. Oops, sorry, wrong radio. Just kidding.
Wrong show. That's
just kidding. I just want to acknowledge Mickey, who I met there in Nebraska when I went up there last year. Mickey Turner is a very nice lady who I believe worked for either UPS or FedEx, and she has a cleaning company. And I'm racking my brains here for my my memory, but she was using a little a pair of hands that she slips onto her to her pointer fingers, and and if she's listening, she knows that what I'm talking about. And I interviewed her, and we had a great time getting to know each other. Anyway, I want to acknowledge also my friends that I know are listening, my friends from the group, the Brain Aneurysm Survivors Group. Lynn Vanderhoof Lawrence should be there, and my friend Yasmin Saab.
Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Do that because, I mean, I think that they are there, so I'm going to come back, and you can run the whole rest of the discussion. But let's do the roll call. So you are Rico, and
yes, I am Rico.
Date, how old you were and what happened?
Yeah. I had a ruptured brain aneurysm in February 9th of 2004. I was 49 years old. Never heard of a brain aneurysm. I don't even know how to spell it. And I was put in a coma for 5 days, and they did a coiling on me, although they needed to cut me up on top of my head. So I have a craniotomy on top of my head, and they put a tube on it. They attached a tube to drain the fluids and the blood that was there. So I stayed about 27 days at the ICU. And after that, I realized months later that I have a headache that doesn't go away, which I still have. And then 6 years later, after being put on a scheduled MRAs to monitor, aneurysm that was coiled, they found another aneurysm in the same area. that was growing at a very alarming rate, and they decided to come in and do a second coiling. I mean, a coiling on that one, too. So I have two coiled, one ruptured and one unruptured brain aneurysm. I am coping with my headache on a daily basis, but I am getting my motivation and my support from the Brain Aneurysm Survivors Group that has about 7,600 members. And I live in Northern California, and I am, although I am, challenged by this aftermath, I believe that, you know, with our united effort, raising awareness and maybe, you know, knocking on the right doors, maybe we could help improve the way they perceive and look at us brain aneurysm survivors.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, Rico, I'm going to bring you right back. We're just going to go down the line because, like I said, Mickey dropped right after she came on and registered. So we had a female, and people can do that. Like I said, it's a right. Holiday weekend. People, things are going on. So I'm just going to let everybody get their dates out, and then we'll come back and have a discussion. So we've got a male who is 49, a female that was 44. I was 35 when I had mine. So, Rico, hang on, and I will bring you back. I think one of the people you mentioned, I'm just going to go right down the line. And first, area code 864, you're on the air. Can you introduce yourself and give us your roll call information?
Sure, you bet. I'm Lynn Vanderhoof Lawrence. My aneurysm was December 1st, 1976. I was 16 years old, and I had two bleeds. I had a clipping, and my goal through the surgery was to get out so I could get into driver's ed and get my driver's license. My big motivation.
Oh.
16.
I can see why it would be. Okay, 16. Lynn, I'll be right back with you. So we've got 35, 44, 49, 16. Area code 803, you're on the air. Can you give us your roll call?
I was a whopping 22 years old. I was a whopping 22 years old when my brain just suddenly exploded on my gob and I collapsed on the cement floor, and that was the first of two brain aneurysms and several surgeries.
Okay, and this is Les Paul.
Yes, I'm sorry, I forgot to say my name.
Okay,
Les Paul,
so
reporting
Les,
for duty.
Thank you, sir. Les Paul is on the 1st, 3rd, and 5th Tuesday of each month. Les is also a host on Brain Injury Radio's. Again, 1st, 3rd, and 5th Tuesday of each month. Also, as you can hear, a multiple aneurysm survivor. And I'm going to bring him and Rico back just shortly when we have the discussion, but I'll keep going down the rolls here. Anyone stay who wants to be part of the discussion, but I'm going to run down the rolls just like I said, so everybody is registered in. Area code 832, you're on the air. Who's this?
This is Jim Eklund. My aneurysm was in June of 2003. It was coiled, and by the grace of God, they found it surely by accident. So.
Really? Okay, and how old were you, Jim?
I was 63. Yeah,
okay.
I did what they call the virtual physical scan from your knees up to your head, and they spotted a spot, and that's where the story went from there.
Wow. All right. Well, and that is indicative sometimes, and thank you, Jim. I'm going to bring you back. I'm going to put you on, park you for a minute here. that is interesting. One of the things as we're going through this and then we'll have the discussion is some people find out there's like no warning and they find out, well, like one of the bolt of lightning that are going on outside my window right now, that it goes on inside their head. And there is no doubt in someone's mind. They don't know what it is, most likely, but that there is something seriously wrong. And others, their aneurysms are found incidentally. There may be in doing what Jim, and we'll get more detail on his story, how his was found incidentally, but that also happens. I've known people that have been going to go in and maybe get knee surgery or whatever it might be, and they have a routine physical, and somehow in the course of a physical or another scan that they get, for whatever reason, an aneurysm is found. So you don't always know. When you rupture, though, you absolutely always know, I think. So let's get on down the roll. Area code 310, who's this?
Hey, Jennifer. Hey, Rico. This is Yasmin Zapp Jennings. How are you doing this evening?
Great, Yasmin. Thank you so much for calling in.
My pleasure, my pleasure. So let me tell you my quick story. It's actually not for me. It's for my son, Leo, or as we call him, Monkey. He was 3 years old when this happened. He collapsed at preschool November 10th, 2009. He collapsed at preschool, totally healthy child, nothing's wrong. And because he collapsed, they did all these tests on him that they wouldn't normally do. I'm sure insurance wouldn't cover it. And they discovered a 15-millimeter aneurysm in his brain, which they then described to me that was 3 times larger than the average adult size. It was unruptured. But at that time, as I'm sure many of you are in the same situation, I did not know anything about aneurysms other than people die from them. I didn't know that there was a way to survive. So here is this beautiful child in this horrible situation. He went through 2 unsuccessful surgeries. On the 3rd surgery, they wound up doing an open brain clipping. So he has that beautiful C scar that you talk about. And he has recovered beautifully. He is a warrior. He had a second one at age of 5. They're not sure if it was a separate second one or if it was a continuation of the one that was fixed originally. But because of that, he suffered a stroke and he lost temporary use of his left side, which he regains. And he runs a little slower sometimes and he's sensitive to the sun. Rico talks about headaches. Leo doesn't have headaches every day, but when he gets them, they're really, really bad. But I have to tell you that he is incredibly lucky because for having such a horrible situation going on in his brain and having it be so large when he was so small, he is an inspiration. He is just wonderful, and he loves his Uncle Rico. He talks about you all the time.
What's not to love, right? Oh,
right.
My goodness. Well, that is, three years old and 5 years old. I mean, to be 5 years old and have had multiples already is just really unthinkable. I'll come back with you if you're here, Jasmine, and we'll hear more about Leo and your situation, but I'm going to put you on hold and go through the roll call. That's really incredible. We've got 35, 44, 49, 16, 22, 63, 3 years old. So hopefully listeners get where we're going with this. And,
absolutely.
And I'll be back. Thank you for calling in. That's incredible. And folks, there's pictures, pictures of Leo. If you clicked on one of the links, there's scrolling pictures of many of the people that are calling in tonight. A darling picture of Leo and his mom, Yasmin, that we have on the line right now. And then some pictures that break your heart of somebody so tiny having to go through that. But thanks, Yasmin. I'm going to run
My
down
pleasure.
The line here. All right. Wow, isn't that something? No respecter of age, these aneurysms happen, and you just never know. Incredible. 3 years old. Whew. Area code 317. I've got 2 317s on the air, so I'll say 317-691. I won't give out your whole telephone number, but give us your roll call information.
Hello, Cam. This is Todd.
Hi, Todd. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great this evening. My name is Todd Grissom. I was 52 years old on March 6, 2014, when I had my brain aneurysm. I had a brain rupture, and they put a coil in. And it's just been...
Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't want to cut you off there.
No.
Okay, so 52 years old. Now, I just want to look real quick. So we've got female, somebody keep track of these. We got a female, 35, female, 44, male, 49, female, 16, male, 22, male, 63, male, 3 years old, male, 52 years old. And I'll be back with you, Todd, in just a minute. We're going to find out who this other 317 is. This isn't you, is it? Do you have two phones?
No.
We got...
That's probably Julie calling in.
That I was going to say, this might be one of your neighbors or something, like
Julie,
the first caller. I remember. Super. All right. Well,
yeah.
Let's not keep her waiting then. All right. Thanks, Todd. I'll be back with you. Okay. 317-525, you're on the air. Who's this?
This is Julie.
Julie, how are you?
Hi. I'm fine, thank you. I had two aneurysms. When the first one ruptured, I was 45. I'm a 6-year survivor, so it happened in 2012.
Okay.
And I had it,
and
the first surgery was to fix, obviously, aneurysm number one, and that was a clipping. I had to have both aneurysms clipped, and I had two clippings 10 weeks apart. Two brain surgeries.
Oh, God. That
I did nothing
just,
more
that is...
to obviously have them done at the same time, but both of my aneurysms were in the frontal lobe. One was left hemisphere, one was right hemisphere, and you obviously can't have that much of your brain open at the same time. And obviously surgery number one was to do nothing more than to save my life and clean up all the blood that I lost. So they had to do two separate surgeries. So that's why I had to have the two, and they suggested to do the second surgery as quickly as possible, because aneurysm number one obviously was a leak, but aneurysm number two was bigger than aneurysm number one and hadn't done anything yet, so they wanted to clip it as soon as possible. So that's why I had to, or they suggested that it be taken care of as quickly as possible, because they were afraid it was going to do something, and they wanted to obviously take care of it before it did.
Gosh, Julie, I can't even imagine having been through one, and I know many of you, and we'll be talking about that in a while, have been through more than one. And I was going to say, in my case, I get all the reasons why they wanted to do it quick with you. They'd have to do it quick with me. I'd probably, I don't know, run away. Not like you can run away from this, but after having one, I can't even imagine. They would have had to knock me out like a horse for that couple of weeks coming into the next one, because, boy, it's sure nothing to look forward to, is it, when you know it's coming? It's one thing when you didn't know it was coming, but I can't imagine knowing it's coming and yeah. having that to look forward to when you've been through it, horrible.
It was. I went in for my post-op appointment after surgery number one, thinking, you know, that's what it was. It was a post-op appointment, and I went in there scheduling my surgery for aneurysm number two, and I'm like, wait a minute, no, I don't want to do this. That was not any fun. So I have the C incision
no.
on both sides of my head. One
oh,
on each side.
Oh, jeez. And did
yep.
your hair grow back over it?
Oh, yeah. Yes, it did, yes.
Boy, it'd be interesting if all of us were bald. I think what there's been, I don't know, 15 people that have called in so far. If all of us were bald, our heads would look like roadmaps, I think. So we're very fortunate we got to,
yeah.
got to have our hair grow over these things.
Yeah.
But that's also another thing that keeps us kind of anonymous, and it's very hard for people to understand people
yeah,
who have had a brain injury
yeah.
and why aren't we better? You know, why aren't we better? I was telling a story and then I'm going to go right back down the roll here. But, you know, between my high school and college, I broke my femur and in an accident. And I have a long, ugly, fat scar going from practically my hip to my knee. And it had to be pinned. And, you know, even all these, a million years later, I was 17 then, I'm in my upper 50s now, you know, I've had that scar most of my life and people have seen it. And it always registers because they see something that you went through something. And you even get, I even get credit for breaking the largest bone in the body this many years later, yet they can't see the scar that almost did me in
right
and don't expect or understand if I'm too fatigued to do something or if I'm in operation overload or any one of the residuals, short-term memory, you know, you just told me
right.
your name but I don't remember. It's very hard for people to understand because there's not something obvious they can see. But thank you, Julie, for calling. I'm going to put you on hold. Keep
oh,
going
no,
down the roll.
Thank
if you,
you
want to stay for the discussion, please do.
Okay.
And
thank
we'll
you.
See you shortly. You bet.
Okay.
Thank you for calling in. Okay, I'm going to go down to 612. So area code 612. You're on the air. Roll call for you.
Oh, hi. My name is Megan Bacigalupo, and I live in Minneapolis, and I'm 53, and last September, so almost a year for me, coming up on the anniversary, I was biking home, and I just had the spontaneous rupture, the no warning. I was having a great night just on my way home, and boom, the, what did you call it, the lightning bolt, and I was so lucky. I was, my instincts took over. Something was dreadfully wrong. And I had the whole whooshing sound in my ears. And then I went kind of muffled, deaf. I couldn't really hear. I jumped off the bike. And luckily, I was right in front of a coffee shop in my neighborhood. And I literally just kind of handed the bike to someone. And I said, call me an ambulance. And it came right away, and oh, my God, was I ever lucky. And I had a subarachnoid ruptured brain hemorrhage, and I recovered really, really well, and stroke. So, yeah, I'm pretty blessed. I'm so thrilled that I'm alive, actually. So.
Yes, absolutely. And you bring up another good point, which we'll discuss later, and that is, you know, when I came here, there were all the other hosts. We had an original 7 hosts on the show when we started many years ago. Now it's different with natural attrition as the weekly hosts left or cut back. Now we have about 20 hosts. Some do once a month, some do twice a month. I think the only one still doing a weekly show. But it was the first time, and it was 17 years after the fact, that I came to be a host, and we had our first meeting. There were 6 other people. They were all TBIs, and somebody said, they, a couple of them pointed fingers and said, well, she's an ABI. And I'm like, what? I thought I had a ruptured brain aneurysm 17 years prior to that. And, you know, I've been called worse, but, you know, he called me an ABI. What the hell is that? You know, So that's an acquired brain injury. I came to find out that an acquired brain injury happens from the inside of the brain, like an aneurysm, a stroke, an AVM, brain tumor, anything originating from the inside, and a TBI originates from the outside, your car accidents, your concussions, a blow to the head. And one of the things that you brought up is that when I went to write my book was the first time I ever saw my medical report, and it used the verbiage, it was all interchangeable. Yes, it did say ruptured brain aneurysm, but it said subarachnoid hemorrhage, and it said, what was it, hemorrhagic stroke? That word was the other one.
Subarachnoid.
Okay. Okay, so all three of those were used interchangeably depending on which doctor report it was in my medical records, and so it is a form of stroke, too, for those that are out there listening. And that's one of the things about Brain Injury Radio, is that over the years, this has, you know, become all-inclusive where it comes to trauma to the brain, because where we all have our different stories and our different journeys, the brain is the brain, and when it's assaulted or has trauma, whether it's from the inside or the out, and tonight we will be focusing on aneurysms for Aneurysm Awareness Month, but a lot of us have the same kinds of residuals, which we'll talk about later. And so,
yeah, that's a really good point, because I just learned all that myself, because I've done quite a bit of research, actually. I'm kind of a research maniac, and how all these things now, they're all inclusive, even though they're all kind of separate, but we're all in one big categorization, you know? So, yeah, it's interesting.
Yes.
For sure.
Well, and I don't want to say I appreciate everything that you know, the groups and the associations do, but, you know, one reason why I really like the chair I'm sitting in on Brain Injury Radio is that we aren't at all political. And we are a broken nonprofit, but we've never asked for donations or anything on the air. Our founder works very hard to make sure that we stay on the air. And unfortunately, the politics of different organizations can often divide our community. And I went 17 years without ever having met another brain injury survivor of any kind. There were no support groups. I had a visiting neurosurgeon and an internist that misdiagnosed me, so I was very lonely and polarized, confused for the better part of 2 decades, and now in the last 6 years that I've been here, I've learned more than in almost 2 decades prior from other survivors, peer-to-peer support. So we should all be united and never let any other person, place, thing, organization get in the way of our primary purpose, which is to support each other. No matter what group we might go to a support group at, we are all brain injury survivors, which gives us all something in common that the rest of the world doesn't share. So thank you for calling.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, I didn't catch your name, because I just was following Rico on the Facebook. And so what is your name?
I'm Kim Justice, K-I-M-J-U-S-T-U-S.
Kim Justice. Okay, and I was interested in maybe checking out what book you wrote. I'm a writer, too, and I've written an article, and all the Brain Aneurysm Foundations have kind of shared it for me, and I've shared it on some support groups, but I was curious in what book you wrote. I'd like to check it out. You said you wrote a book,
great.
Right?
Well, I did, and that's actually what started this. I'm not promoting my book, folks. She asked. I didn't pay her
that's
ahead
okay.
of time
I
to
just
do this.
Kind of I'm kind of learning a lot, so I was just going to ask you what the name of your book was, if you can tell.
No. I'm glad that you did. If you guys want to check out my website, it's inaflash.org. It's all one word, inaflash. I-N-A-F-L-A-S-H.
Oh, okay. Yes. I'll do that. Inaflash.org. Thank you. Yes.
Yes, and what I'll tell you, Megan, is that what's interesting about that, now that you brought it up, and then I'm going to bring everybody back and we can have a discussion, and then as people call in, I don't think there's anyone here that right this minute that I haven't picked up, is I will tell you that I journaled in that first year back in 1995 where I couldn't do much, and I put the journals away when I was able to drive again, and I tried to go back to work and forget that all of that horror just happened. And I went down the road 1995 until 2011. And every year in those years, my mom kept saying, you've got to write a book about your experience. It was so incredible. There were so many miracles. If you don't believe in coincidence and you think that miracles are God's way of working anonymously, my mom kept saying, you got to write a book. And I kept saying, oh, I'm just too busy. You know, I have someday when my desk is clear, I'll think about it. And what wound up happening with me is that the rules changed in my career. I got a TBI. We're going to talk about that later, too. Whether it's another aneurysm or a TBI, people who have experienced trauma to the brain are more likely to experience other trauma to the brain than someone who's never had trauma to the brain. And there's enough studies to bear that out now. But I had to leave my career in 2011. And by that time, I had been married for just 3 years, so my husband only knew me as I am. He didn't know me before, so there was no comparison. And he said to me, because I got very depressed, kind of lost my sense of purpose. Unfortunately, a lot of people tie their sense of value and purpose up in their job description, and, you know, I had done that too. And suddenly I wasn't able to do that, and I was having a crisis, internal crisis, and my husband said, you know, maybe he motioned. I had a real office I couldn't go to anymore, but I had a home office as well, and it was always full of piles. I knew exactly where to find things in my piles, but it would look like a messy office to a lot of people. My husband motioned, and my desk was clear. And he said, well, you know, you're entitled to your feelings, but maybe you'd want to consider writing that book now that your mom is always talking about. And so I wrote the book, and it came out at the beginning of 2012. And at that time, I don't think I had met another survivor and at that point yet. And I knew nothing about any kind of brain injury or aneurysm except my own story. And so someday when I'm not a radio host anymore and I'm ready to hang up my mic, I have a second book coming. It's in my head. I don't have the focus to be able to handle both of these things, but that story mm-hmm. is short. It's exactly what happened to me then. And that part's not going to change. It's just I was writing very pure. In fact, there's a paperback, there's an ebook, and there's an audio book. And I did my own audio book. Mm-hmm. I was going to pay and have someone else do the audio book. And I thought, well, hell, it's your story. You know, who can tell your story better than you? And so right. I did. And that's all on the website. But this isn't a book pump because it's kind of old news, but do check out inaflash.org. It's a story of someone who had never even met someone else yet. Strictly my story of what happened. And someday I'm going to pick up where I left off and say, because of that book, though, the difference between, this is, I think, you know, I don't know where everybody's faith level is, and I'm not selling any, just speaking my piece. You know, if I would have written the book in 95, 96, 97, 98, there wasn't a computer on every desk, and internet wasn't everywhere. And by doing it when I did it, and of course this wasn't planned, things happened the way they happened. God planned it. I didn't. It's not the way I wanted it to go. But by the time I wrote my book, releasing it the beginning of 2012, everybody did have a computer net on their desk. Internet had exploded. And so I wasn't prepared for the onslaught of attention that I was going to get. And I immediately started getting calls. And at that time, it's kind of funny because I didn't know that internet radio and Skype even existed. And I was getting calls from what I call now traditional radio, people wanting to interview an author. And then I was getting calls from people like me on internet radio. And it was as a result of one of those interviews that the founder of our network and I got hooked up. He had had Brain Injury Radio on for almost 2 years, only on Monday night, only him and guests. And he suffered a severe TBI in a car accident, and a lot of fallout for all of us, actually, not only the event that happens, but in his case, it broke his family apart. There was a lot of other things that go along with. There's us coping with it, then there's the people around us coping with it and how we cope with each other. And I think he was just working through processing, he wasn't that far out, his deal, and what he was finding out during the time I was writing my book and we didn't know each other, I'm in Omaha, he's in Spokane, is he was finding out that there was a world full of people like him, like me, like a lot of you, who were isolated, disenfranchised, lonely, confused, didn't know anyone else, who had been through it, didn't understand what was going on with us. And so he was making the decision to make Brain Injury Radio a 7-night-a-week proposition so there would be support for brain injury survivors all the time. And that was right as my book was coming out and I was interviewing, and I wound up being one of the original 7 hosts and have been there every week for 6.5 years.
Oh, wow, that's really cool. That's awesome. Yeah.
It is. One thing led to another, you know, one thing led to another. And like I said, one day when...
Well, that's another thing, too. It's funny that you mentioned that, because when you survive one of these things and you can walk and talk and you're not severely disabled, unfortunately, like many are, you hear about people getting these and dying. You don't hear about those that get them and live and carry on. And that's a whole nother world. And doesn't matter how high functioning you are, there's still, you're unscathed when you go through one of these things. You don't come out completely clean, you know? So it's important that people know. Definitely. So, yeah.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. And it, like I said, things were just laid out for me. You know, they were put in front of me at the time they were supposed to come up. And so, like I said, at some point when I don't have the focus to be able to do a quality show every week and have guests like all of you on the switchboard and out there listening tonight, have great guests like you, and try to be able to focus on life in general and writing the next book that someday I'm going to write. But it's amazing the difference between knowing nothing and knowing enough to be dangerous, I guess. But
exactly.
In any case.
Wow, this has been so exciting. I'm so glad I called in, and it's really nice to be a part of this. I thank you.
Thank you, Megan, and I'll I'll bring you back. We'll put Megan on hold for just a minute. And okay, so far, and we're going to have a little discussion, and I'll watch the board for anyone new that comes in. We had, there's quite a few people listed in the program notes that haven't called yet, but we've had a female age 35, a female age 44, and this is when their aneurysm happened, for any of you who may have just tuned in. Okay, back to the beginning. Female 35, female 44, male 49, female 16, male 22, male 63, male age 3, male age 52, female age 45, female age 53. So we've got everywhere from age 3 to age 63 here. And one of the people, I want to see if he's still on the line, and then I'll be bringing you all back on and we'll have a discussion. But I want to flip to Jim for just a moment, because when Jim was on, he was telling us that his aneurysm was found in an interesting way. I'd like to hear a little bit more about, as I said in the beginning, for some of us who experienced a rupture, we knew immediately that something was wrong. It was like a searing bolt of lightning right through the middle of our brain that didn't stop until we were in a coma or gone. It didn't let up. It wasn't like a bad ouch and then it let up. It stayed. It stayed and accelerated. And we knew. Yet there's a lot of others out there who don't experience a rupture. Some people have an aneurysm or more in their brain, and they live and die without ever having known it. That is a possibility with aneurysm as well, that it's there, it's never discovered. Someone goes through their whole life without even knowing about it, maybe found in an autopsy later on, but nothing they had to deal with in their lifetime. And there's people who have had multiple aneurysms. And there is, I think, and some of you newer people can correct me on this, but the last I heard, there was a protocol now that if an aneurysm was found unruptured, that it had to be a certain size. If it was under that size, people were on a wait and see, would get periodic scans, hope and pray that it didn't grow or rupture. And if it got to a certain size, then a procedure to correct it in hopes to keep it from rupturing would be done, whether that would be a clipping or a coiling. I believe there's bypass, and Rico might be able to speak to some of these newer treatment techniques that have come out, and there's been a couple that have gone by the wayside. I remember at one point I heard about one called Onyx. My impression about that, although I'm not a doctor, just a survivor, was that Onyx was something along the lines of crazy glue. That didn't wind up working. At least I haven't heard of anybody that's had it. I'm not hearing of anyone having it. So I think there was a couple new things that kind of went by the wayside and some new things that have come out since. But why don't we bring Jim back for a moment, because he's one of those who found out about his aneurysm in an incidental way, and it sounded interesting the way that he found it out. So Jim, I've got you back on the air. Were age 63 when your aneurysm was discovered. Now, let me give you a little more time. Go through and tell us again, when you were saying a virtual physical, I guess I don't even understand what that was. Can you do that can you get a physical on the computer?
Well, yeah, actually you can. Basically, it's a CT scan, and I lived in Northern Virginia at the time, and I used to listen to a radio station. They would advertise this virtual physical all the time. So I told my wife, I said, you know, maybe we ought to try it. It was not allowed in the state of Virginia, but it was in Maryland, and I was right in the D.C. area, so it's real easy to get to Maryland. And we decided to do it. So we went, and it takes 10 minutes. And then a radiologist
sees
the scan. And this radiologist saw a speck on my brain. So he said, well, why don't you bring this up to your family doctor and see what he says? So I did, and, you know, he got the records. And he said, well, let's look a little further at this. And I went, and I had an MRI and MRA. And they found this large aneurysm. I don't remember the exact size. It was I think about a 10 or 11. And so I said, well, now what do I do? Well, I said, well, here's a neurosurgeon. Go and see him. So I did. And this guy told me, you know, I'm going to cut a hole in your head and I'm going to clip it. And you might lose your memory for 6 months or maybe a year, some of it maybe forever. You're going to be in the hospital for quite a while. And then he looked at me and he says, you know, there's a new procedure that they've just completed all kinds of testing on and that. It's been okayed by the FDA. Go and see this other doctor at Fairfax Hospital. So I said, okay. So I did that. And this was a guy that he was a radiologist. He was doing coiling. And he told me about the procedure. Mm-hmm. He said, we'll get you in there and do this coiling and, you know, you'll be in intensive care overnight, maybe in the hospital for a day, and the next day you'll go to work. I said, well, that sounds a lot better than having a hole cut in my head. So we did the procedure. I had an angiogram, and 6 months later, looked good. A year later, looked good. 2 years later, and then he said, you're done. He said, really, really nothing else I can do, and it looks good. So I went back, had another one of these physicals, and, of course, where the platinum coils were, they looked like a 4th of July celebration in that section. And this particular radiologist told me, he said, you know, that little speck from the last time you were in here, I would have never even said anything. He said, I wouldn't even have told you about it. So I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, God was definitely looking over me at that time. Because the radiologist that I had is the one that spotted it and said something. This guy said he wouldn't have even mentioned it. And since then, that's my story. It was I knew what an aneurysm was, and typically somebody that had one, you know, it burst and it died. And that's about all I knew. I didn't know about clipping. I didn't know about anything. As I'm finding out, most people don't. You know, they don't know much about it. So that's my story. The radiologist told me I do have another small one, but it was not in the brain. It was another area, and he just told me, he said, well, if it all pops out, you'll know what it is. So I haven't had any problems with that. So anyway, that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
Well, that is very interesting. First of all, this virtual physical, I didn't know that existed, but it's very cool that you were, that the coil was an option for you. When I had mine, like I mentioned at the beginning, your choice was dying or having a craniotomy and getting the clipping. And, you know, it's interesting that when you go back to look at normal, and a couple of us were talking earlier about the sea scars, and it's nice that it would be horrible if we were bald. Our head would look like a road map. But, you know, when the hair covers up the scar, you know, I don't think people realize. I almost look at this as the acquired brain injury that it is. But the surgery itself, when you have a craniotomy, is almost like a TBI, because they are, and I don't want to be gross, but this is an awareness show, you know, they what they do, that sea scar comes from carving around your face and flapping your face forward. They take a little skill saw and cut out a portion of your skull so they can access the part of your brain that has the bleed going on. They vacuum out any blood that has seeped or leaked or shot out of the aneurysm, and then they clip it off. And that clipping, I'd liken that to when someone has a baby, what they do with the umbilical cord. They clip it, and it reroutes everything, you know, going through other pathways in the brain, and it just cuts that one off. And then they put the piece of skull back in, flip your face up, and then staple you back together. And how anyone could imagine that that wouldn't be injurious to someone while it, at the same time, it's saving their life, that that's not child's play surgery, you know?
No.
And it takes a special skill. In fact, and then I'm going to bring the rest of you on. I see I've got some other callers. And Jim, thank you for sharing. I'm glad that everything worked out the way that it did for you. And it's important to hear an example like yours. I'm so glad that you called in, because if you get scanned regularly or get those physicals, you have a chance of being able to have it handled the way that Jim got it handled, which is still no stroll in the park, but it's less invasive than a craniotomy is. And you were fortunate, we're fortunate now as an aneurysm community that is one of the options for a lot of people. And so thank you, Jim, and I'll bring you back, but I appreciate you sharing that with us and calling in. Let me flip down here for just a minute. Okay, so boy, that's interesting, yes, finding them incidentally and having it be a coiling. My understanding is that we've got a couple new callers. I'll have them do their roll call, and then we'll open up for some more discussion. I do have a couple questions I'd like to ask Yasmin as well. But now the other thing in awareness that people should know is that while there are different types of treatments now, you can't pick and choose. Well, I think that coil thing sounds a lot easier. I'd much rather do that than have open brain surgery. It's not always a choice like that. A lot depends on the size and the location of the aneurysm as to what your doctor is going to recommend for your treatment and what procedure you'd be eligible to have. Hopefully you're going to be at a place where they're familiar with the options. And I would always make sure, now that I've been down this road, and I was very fortunate, and then callers, I'm going to bring you back on, those with your hands up. I had a visiting neurosurgeon, and microneurosurgical techniques were brand new at the time. And you think about brain surgery and big hands trying to dance in that small area without killing you or turning you into a vegetable. And so what had to happen is when they came up with this surgery, they needed to come up with a whole new set of surgical tools, tiny tools to access the tiny area. And they had to get swelling down, because a lot of times when this happens, especially a rupture, the brain swells. That makes an already tiny area even tinier, and so they weren't able to use the big old tools they use for other surgeries. A man, Dr. Yesergil, who's from a Swiss doctor, actually was the father of microneurosurgical techniques and also created many of the tools used, including clips, in the early days. And my visiting neurosurgeon, by the grace of God, I don't think there was anyone in our town in 1995 who knew how to do this kind of intricate surgery, but a doctor, Dr. Fox was my doctor's name, now retired and long gone, but he happened to be here teaching our doctors how to do this clipping procedure, and he had studied with Dr. Yesergil. Now, my internist misdiagnosed my condition, and if it would have been up to him, if a series of miracles wouldn't have happened, that I happened to be with a parent, which normally didn't happen during the daytime, in a work day. I lived in a home by myself. If it would have been with a friend that this happened, I would have gone to the hospital, been diagnosed with a muscle spasm in my neck, picked up the painkillers, and gone to my home where I lived alone and died. And that would have been the end of the story. So obviously, as Paul Harvey would say, there's more to the story, but I was very fortunate in that way, but I'm disheartened. Another reason why I want to have this awareness show tonight is that that was in 1995. An internist who had a patient that he had had for probably 20 years, and I never went to the doctor. Once a year I would call in if I had tonsillitis or bronchitis or something, he'd call a prescription over to the pharmacy, and that would be, and I'd go get my physical with another doctor, and that was the end of it. So I wasn't a hypochondriac or anything. The doctor never saw me. I hadn't been a whiner or gone in for anything. So when I presented at the emergency room, I would have thought that you'd have to know it was really serious or I wouldn't be there. And one of the things I learned, obviously, he made a bad call. He missed it, didn't order a scan. And so he screwed up, you know, and that might have been my life if God didn't have other plans. It certainly wasn't his talent or ideas. He didn't catch it. The other thing, though, is when I did go back the next day when I couldn't speak or comprehend and I was fading, is they did have me squeeze their finger and tell who the president was and some of those things. And, you know, initially you can do that. One of the things that I find, many of us can, disheartening is that people are still getting misdiagnosed today in the same way as I was back in 1995. That same scenario is likely to happen today. What that tells me is that shining a flashlight in someone's eyes, asking them their name and birth date, who the president is, having them squeeze a finger or track with a finger is an inadequate test, because there can be someone in front of you who can be dead in the next few hours with their brain bleeding, and you're not able to tell by that simple neurological test. The minute a scan was done, the bleed was there, and I was in intensive care. So I recommend, if you have the opportunity beforehand, like some of the people that we've spoken to, you knew ahead of time you were going to need to go through this. When you look for a neurosurgeon, ask them questions. This is your brain. This is command central for the whole rest of your body. Ask, you know, you think that any neurosurgeon might do. I wouldn't. I would ask if they work on brain aneurysms, how many they've done, how long they've been doing it, which isn't to say that that's a guarantee, but it is to say that the person specializes in that. They're not a neurosurgeon who specializes in some other procedure. You really want somebody that specializes in aneurysms, who has worked on aneurysms and is very familiar with them. And so if you have time and you're looking around for neurosurgeons, don't just throw a dart in the phone book. And if you go to your regular doctor and you're feeling your balance is off, you're having terrible blasting headaches, you have some symptoms that we're going to talk about in just a little while, if your regular doctor doesn't find something and it's still bothering you, go get a second opinion, because they miss. An internist is not a brain specialist. In fact, I found out a lot of neurologists aren't brain specialists either. Certain things have to be done. So you want to make sure that the people that work on you have worked on others that have had aneurysms, and that's going to give you the best shot, I think. So let me pull up a couple callers here. 509, you're on the air. You had your hand up. Are you?
Hello.
Hey.
So sorry, I ran late.
It's okay.
Is you ready?
Everyone.
So how are you? Good show.
Yeah.
Good
Thank
show,
you.
So.
Thank you. This is Craig, everyone, and he is the founder of Brain Injury Radio, and we're all very grateful to him to allow us as hosts to be able to have shows like this and to help other people. And I was mentioning earlier how we've never asked for contributions. We are a nonprofit and like funding, but we just, I don't know, Craig, I really appreciate you. You've always wanted to put the resources out there for all of our voices to be heard and for us to have the freedom to have shows like this. And you were very forthcoming and open-minded. I don't know if you were there in the beginning when I told the story of our first meeting and I said I had been called worse in my life, but I only knew that I had a ruptured brain aneurysm, and a couple people pointed and laughed and said, "She's an ABI. She doesn't belong here." And you had the foresight at the time.
I have a question for you then. Was it traumatic, your experience? Your experience, was it traumatic?
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, if you look back at originally when they named traumatic brain injury, they're naming it because usually the incidences were so traumatic. You know, then later it went on to, you know, blunt force. But, you know, some injuries now are way more traumatic than the TBI. You know, some TBIs are pretty, you don't even know you have them until later down the road. Yeah,
exactly.
With an aneurysm, you have it. You know you have it.
Well, you know
no
you have
it.
If it ruptures, you know you have it,
right.
No doubt about it. But there's a lot of people walking around that have them. They don't know they have them, or like this Jim we spoke to who found it incidentally.
Yeah, I heard that.
I'm going to bring Yasmin back on. And my God, her three-year-old son, we're going to hear more detail, three-year-old son, and he's on the scroller, just a little doll, Leo, at 3 years old had an aneurysm and a craniotomy. And at 5 years old, a second aneurysm and a stroke. And so it's no, just like TBI, it's no respecter. In fact, I'll do a quick roll call. A female, 35. These are how old people were when they had them. A female, 35. A female, 44. A male, 49. A female, 16. A male, 22. a male 63, a male 3 years old, a male 52, a female 45, a female 53. And so it's no respecter of sex, age, any other inclination. Anybody can have an aneurysm. That's right. That's right. And anyway, back to what I was saying, and just I appreciate the way that you did Brain Injury Radio and that it's inclusive. Like I said, I'm not going to pick on anybody tonight, but I feel very blessed to be in this seat where there aren't politics. We aren't dividing our own community. We're trying to bring our community together because anybody who suffered brain trauma, we all have our own stories, but we've gone through the isolation, the confusion, the polarization, the frustration, and a lot of us have done that alone. We haven't been able, there have been no support groups. Maybe it happened back before, like I said, when mine happened, the internet wasn't really up and running. Everybody didn't have a computer on their desk, and I know that yours happened later. The computer was there, but until you started Brain Injury Radio, that was part of why you started Brain Injury Radio, because it's very hard to maneuver through something like a brain trauma when the people around you, once you look normal, you don't get what's going on inside you. They don't get what's going on inside you. It's very hard to get a grip on who you are again and deal with other people in the meantime and then try to project it to them and get any kind of understanding. It's very complicated, and support is something that we really need, not division by I'm in this group or I'm in this group. We are brain injury survivors, and we are here to support each other and to give people information, people that are out there listening to the show.
When we get together, we become a group of experts, and we'll give some pretty good advice once we find each other.
Yes, and for that I'm very grateful you've given us the opportunity for so long. We're coming up on 8 years, folks. Craig's going to have to look it up, but
9 years.
We'll be
9 years.
Having a... Oh, right, 9 years. Okay, that means I'm coming up on 7, because Craig did it 2 years, one night a week on his own, before he went to the 7-night-a-week platform. So, and, you know, we're not getting less people. We're getting more people all the time. So there's 2.5 million brain injuries a year, and we'll give you some aneurysm statistics in a little while. But thanks, Craig, for – and I got to – Joey is on vacation, so it worked out well that September 1st we could have a kickoff brain aneurysm awareness show. And any of the organizations now, if they'd like an extra tool to use during Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month, this is a great episode for people to share on their with their support groups, with their associations or alliances or whomever it might be, because there is a very good mix of everything that is represents a brain aneurysm here tonight. So thanks.
You are very welcome. Thank you for all the support and all the hosts, and they are saving lives out there. You know, saving the afterlife.
Yep.
So
working on it.
One person
okay.
at a time.
One person at a time. Let's hear from I do want to hear from let's see if she's still here. I'm gonna spin down to Enrico. I will bring you back on, but I wanted to see if I wonder if, okay, I'm not seeing, I'm not seeing her on here. Jasmine, that's who I'm saying. Jasmine, unless she hung up and called back in, let me scroll up the line again. I will have her back for another show if she did have to leave. I do want to hear about little Leo. I hear he's a real spitfire now, and he's doing good in recovery, but boy, 3 years old, I can't even imagine. And then a second one at 5 years old and a stroke at the same time. I'm going to run down real quick to these two, and you might have been on before and your call dropped or you've called back in because I've been putting names under, but I just want to double check. Area code 817. Who's this?
How do I go?
I'm sorry. Who is this?
Oh, my name is Olga Ayala.
Okay, Olga. And
yes,
did you have a brain aneurysm?
Yes, ma'am. I have two of them. I had one clip and one coiled unsuccessfully. It's inoperable until a scientist can find a way to a cure for it, to treat it. So I just live like day by day. I don't know what's going to happen, you know, if I'm going to wake up. And I'm looking forward. We're going to a brain aneurysm reunion on to where, Sam?
In Colorado.
Oh, in Colorado, in Denver. At what's the name of the hotel? The I'm sorry, but I'm a survivor. And before my brain aneurysm, my brother had one 2 months before I did. And
You're
he had
kidding.
His clip. And then no, seriously. And then we were at the same hospital. And they put us in the same hospital room, but just by coincidence. And then I found out my cousin has five small ones. So
wow.
I guess, I don't know, I guess they're hereditary in my case. We knew nothing about it, you know, before my brother had
right.
his. And I have sisters, but
right.
a few of them are afraid to get checked, you know. They don't want to hear the
imagine.
News that...
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I can imagine. Olga, how old were you when you first became aware of an aneurysm? I'm kind of keeping a tally here.
Okay. I was 54. And
okay.
That's when my brother had his also. He is a...
God.
I'm sorry. He's 60. He just turned 60
okay.
last year.
Okay.
And it was the same time. And September the 7th, I'll have survived 2 years from my first clipping.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I pray that your other one holds stable until they find
too.
A way to deal with
a
it.
Cure. I know. Scary. I sure do. Thank you for taking your time.
Well, I thank you. No, I thank you for calling in. Part of the awareness, having a show on awareness, is I think, now I'm not aware of anyone in my family who has had a brain aneurysm, but again, some people can live and die without ever knowing that they've had them. There may not be, you know, another tie that they haven't even come close to looking at is, you know, there are some neurological issues in, on one side of my family for sure, not aneurysm, but neurological. And I wonder if there's any
okay.
connection with that. I think some people can have a genetic component to it, and others, It might be as a result of an outside force trauma that they wind up having a brain. So, you know, so many possibilities that the medical profession just doesn't really know yet. But isn't that strange, the proximity of you and your brother? And I understand your sisters. You know, one of the people I'm going to bring back on in a minute is, you know, they do tell you to get scanned every, and I don't know what the protocol is these days, once a year or whatever it is, they tell you to get scanned and are pretty insistent about that. But I understand why your sisters don't. I do. I know that that is taking a risk, and to those, and I'm not recommending anything to anybody, do go get scanned. You don't want to have a ruptured brain aneurysm, and that's why you get scanned, so that hopefully they can catch it before and maybe have a less invasive procedure, like Jim had the coiling instead of it being a rupture. But at the same time, what you're dealing with, it's a scary proposition, and I'm sure that you have to work really hard at staying in the day and being positive,
a lot of
and not living in fear, and a lot of medication and all of that. And when you think about it, none of us are guaranteed the next day. And so, you know, your family that does go get scanned, I understand. The people who don't go get scanned, I understand, because none of us are guaranteed tomorrow. Anything could happen. And so so you go get scanned and you find out you do or you don't, but you wind up going out in this thunderstorm we're having here in the Midwest right now and getting hit by a bolt of lightning that night, you know. I just am grateful for each day that I have and try really hard to stay in the day, which I suppose is something that you do too. You'll be in my prayers, Olga, that you steady and aren't in need of anything further.
Can I tell you also, and I have a friend, her name was Avelia. She passed away driving. Actually, they thought she was DWI because she had injured others in a car accident. And when they did the autopsy, it turned out that she had a brain aneurysm rupture as she was driving.
Wow.
It's just more awareness.
It is. Well, it is awareness, and it's funny you'd say that. I won't go into it because of time, but I would have been driving when mine ruptured, and there's every reason on earth I should have been driving when mine ruptured, because my job was sales and I was out during the day driving every day. And that particular day, I saw my dad, and he knew that I was going to a place where I just needed to get a signature on a sale that had been made already. And he offered to drive and said, why don't I drive you? You can get your signature and then we'll stop and have a cappuccino on the way back. And so I happened to be riding with him, I call it a miracle, but a fluke, like the snap of a finger like that made all the difference, because I got that signature. Everything was fine. I got the signature like I was supposed to. I introduced my father to the client. We left the client. I think we had driven a block and a half when it was like an axe got buried in my head, and I pulled my arms and my legs in, you know, and yelped. And he was driving, and he looked over and said, what's wrong? And I said, I need to go to a hospital. Now, I had no idea what was going on, but if I would have been driving at that moment, I would have lost control of the car. And so I can certainly understand that, and that's why I talk about having fear. I do drive. I'm able to drive, but I don't drive at night. I don't like driving in bad weather. I don't like driving in rain. And sometimes if I'm just feeling overloaded, you know, the sensory overload and maybe a lot of neuro fatigue, or I've just maybe had too much coming at me, I don't feel comfortable driving outside my comfort zone during those times. Other times I'm just fine and I don't even think about it. But, you know, my aneurysm happened January 9th, and I live in Nebraska where we get snow. And I remember that it was snowy when this happened. It wasn't snowing. It was after the snow's been there for a while and it's dirty. I remember barely being able to see, but seeing this dirty snow in the streets after it's been there, you know, a few days, getting glimpses of that and it being so bitterly cold. And I had this bitter pain searing through my head. And, you know, sometimes in the winter, I just am too anxious to drive. You know, it just, I go out and I maybe have a headache anyway, or the cold weather feels like a slap in the face, you know, right when you walk out the door. And I just kind of, nope, don't think I want to do this today. And,
I can imagine.
You know,
I quit driving.
Did you?
You there? I quit completely driving because I don't want to endanger anyone or hit anyone or have a car accident. I used to care for my mother and my brother, and I feel terrible because I no longer can.
It's, so, yeah, it's a tough
my
proposition
husband is with me.
Sometimes.
My husband is with me, and he's helped me a lot. He takes me everywhere
That's
I need to go. Great. His name is Sam.
Hi, Sam.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. You're...
Well,
so you're
hello
a great
from Fort Worth,
partner.
Thank you.
All
I'm a great partner, and I'm also a, I would call myself as a spouse a survivor, because this also affects spouses, too, and their families, because of what we have to endure taking care of her, and it totally changes our lives completely. I mean, of course, we both quit drinking and smoking at the same time, and it's just we've completely done a 360, 180, and all that other good stuff. But we feel better about ourselves now, and this is really just this experience on a spouse side of it has really changed us. And it affects everybody.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, you guys were married before this happened, so you know the before and the after, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. We were the partying type, having company on weekends and stuff, but, you know, to have to go cold turkey on this when all of this hit us, it's really changed our lives completely, and it's made us, you know, we got the big picture on reality now, you know, so, and, you know, that's something we have to deal with day to day.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Well, you're to be commended in a lot of these stories that I hear. You know, family members or partners are either just unaware. You know, they're unaware, or some families are broken up over it.
Yes,
you know that isn't what the partner thought they signed up for, even though they said the words in sickness and in health. When tested, they resent it. That isn't the way that they thought the plan was going to unfurl, and so they're not happy. And so I commend you for being a good partner and being a good support to your wife, because it is difficult on you, and as you said, a family affair, difficult on you, I'm sure, difficult on her, but I commend you for living up to your vows and supporting her and trying to understand how she's feeling. I know that's hard, and vice versa, it's hard, but the fact that you guys are trying and doing it, I think is a great thing. You set a really good example. I'm happy you called into the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And we don't want to take up any more of your time, but thank you for taking our call.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for calling in. Olga and Sam, have a good time at the convention in Denver.
Will do.
Okay. You bet. Good night. Okay, I'll scroll up the, I'm going to bring Rico back on. Rico, we've got about 24 minutes left in the show. You're the one that started all of this. I'm sorry to leave you parked, but I'm sure, like me, you've found all of the comments interesting and had it bear out what you see every day in your great brain aneurysm support page on Facebook and what I see from people who call in to the show, and that's that aneurysm is no respecter of much of anything. We've had young people, older people, men, women, kids, all kinds of people with the aneurysm, and whether it's been a rupture or not, a coil or a craniotomy, so many different contingencies. So what are you thinking about this time?
I could tell you that some of the people that you talked to today are members of Brain Aneurysm Survivors Group. Ogie Ayala and her husband Sam are, participants in most of our conversations. So I get, I know a little bit of who they are and what they're going through. Megan Basigalupo, that's her last name, from Minnesota, from Minneapolis. I didn't have a chance to meet her when I went up there, but we talked, on Messenger once in a while. I make a habit of trying to get to know my friends in the group, by talking to them individually, and I think I have a pretty good idea of the wide variety of situations, and that's why I could be brave enough to put it out there that it is no respecter of age, gender, and even education. I mean, it doesn't matter you're college educated or you're a high school dropout. If it hits you, it hits you. It's just a matter of luck sometimes when people, get attended to in time to be taken to the emergency room, and also the presence of a very good neurosurgeon or neuroradiologist or neurointerventional radiologist. They come up with all these highly technical titles. But nonetheless, it is all a matter of timing. If you get there in time, you might end up with less deficits than most other survivors. So timing is one. The other factor would be the location of the aneurysm. Ogie has one that hasn't been touched because it's in a location that is hard to reach, I guess, it is unruptured, some people have that luxury of being told that you have it, but we're going to wait and see what happens. To some of us, like me, I had a rupture and I had no choice, and it was a matter of life and death. And, they have to make quick decisions on what to do. Also, the age of the person is a very big factor. for cases like Leo or Monkey, that's Yasmin Sapp's son, who was 3 years old when he was first diagnosed with it. He is now, 7 or 8 years old, and he's doing well, you know, considering what he has gone through. But, you know, there are others in the group, Shannon Moore Mattson from Minnesota, who had it when she was a little girl. And, growing up, she was in and out of the hospital because of that, and there are other events in her life that affected her not being, given enough care at the time. Plus, technology has something to do with it too. You know, today's technology, and you mentioned earlier, if I could talk a little bit about it, they have all these new advancements and developments in technology. There are competing companies who manufacture the materials that they use. You know, all we know is we say, oh, I have a titanium coil, you know, and I had mine in 2004, and you had yours in 1995. I believe that, you know, the material that they used on your clipping in 1995 is pretty much considered primitive now to what they use. You know, I've seen online, I do have this that I have on my Google, my Gmail, that tells me any news stories about brain aneurysms. And I once in a while I get these articles about the materials that they use. They have, aside from titanium coils, they have something they call hydrogel coils, which is, you know, very lightweight and it's very flexible. They also have come up with stents with webbings, and there's so much cure or a fix that they came up with that were, that makes the risks of it being taken care of better than it was years before. In fact, when I had my aneurysm in 2004 rupture, the material that they use in 2004 is different from what they used on me in 2010 when I had a second aneurysm show up. So there's been quite an advancement with technology and science, and that's one thing that we, we should applaud. But when you get back to the attention that we get from, the hospitals, that is another story. You know, as I said, and I've been talking to people about this, when you are diagnosed with diabetes, they send you to a school where you have to learn what kind of food not to eat or what kind of food that you can eat. They also teach you how to draw blood and measure your blood sugar. They also tell you to, advise you to go do exercises and whatnot and so on and so forth. When I was released from the hospital, they just let me go. They checked my my medications, which are mostly painkillers, and that's it. They said, I'm fine. They let me go. There was no assessment as to if I'm capable to go back to work, that I, if my memory is okay. There was no assessment as to, if my personality has changed, my family wasn't even given an orientation of the changes that they can expect from me being a survivor. Of course, you are aware that most survivors go through changes in personality, they go through depression, they go through neurofatigue, and some others develop other develop brain maladies. I know some people who had Bell's palsy. When they have a drooping, side of the face is drooping. Some develop moya. Sjogren's, which is a dryness of mouth and dryness of eyes. And, I've learned about this from people that I've talked to in the group that has pretty much progressed from just being a survivor to now have to face these different challenges. And, you know, with me, it's a 24/7 headache. But I consider mine very minor to some of our friends that are out there that are going through other stuff. You know, I could tell you stories where, you know, a family gets broken, you know, to pieces because of the aneurysm of a spouse. You know, divorces have happened, you know, disowning parents and kids has happened. There's a lot of, you know, factors. There's a lot of things that could go. There are so many twists and turns in the aftermath of a brain aneurysm. And this hasn't been looked at. And the other thing that I noticed is that you're right when you mentioned there's so many groups, so many foundations. But instead of having a unified effort, you know, there is so much bickerings and so much competition, and we're not moving, you know, along because there is no direct flow of information, if you will, and some people, you know, lack resources. Like in our group, we have a few people who needs information how to handle their finances after brain aneurysm. You know, people who used to have a full-time job, now they cannot go back to work because of their deficits. Some have to file for bankruptcy. Some people have to pay up their hospital bills and go into, you know, go into bankruptcy. Some people cannot even get disability. So we need to focus our attention to the survivors that are existing right now. Yeah, we are doing good in doing, in sharing, in spreading awareness. You know, everybody has a website. You could go into that and key in a question, and you will get the answers. The information is already there. But what are we doing with the survivors? You know, you yourself, you know, you have gone through so many things. Things could have been easier or better for you if somehow there was somebody or an entity that guided you through your healing process or your, you know, your rehab. You know, and nobody can say that, you know, we're all different. We're all different. And this is where my advocacy is coming from. I mean, you know, I know because I've talked to so many different people, and it breaks my heart to see, you know, a good family has started to crumble into pieces because of a brain aneurysm. You know, a business was lost because of the brain aneurysm. You know, a good marriage went down the drain because of a brain aneurysm. You know, and death, you know, it's, again, you know, the mere fact that some people are aware already, but they're scared to get themselves checked. I had sisters who are in the group. The sister was with her, the sisters were together during the Christmas week, and the other sister was asking her sister to get check, and she refused. A week later, New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, she got a call from her niece, and she says, "Talk to my mom. She's in the hospital, and she wants to talk to you. She's dying from a ruptured brain aneurysm." You know, so there has to be more attention given to survivors and their families. And, you know, Sam voiced out the. You know, it's not just the person who had a brain aneurysm. The whole family is affected, and that's where my advocacy is coming from. Nobody is really looking into the plight or the welfare of the brain aneurysm survivors. And there's so many of them now.
Yes. I want to ask you a quick question. We've only got about 10 minutes left, but one of the things I want to ask you, because I keep forgetting, you know, memories, one of them, right? I wondered if in residuals that you talk about, because we know about the headaches, the short-term memory, the mood swings, the overload, sensory overload types of things. Have you heard of grinding, teeth grinding?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Tinnitus. You know, there's so many other things. Tinnitus. Teeth grinding, you know, ringing in the ears, you know, sensitivity to light. There's so many things, and this is the reason why, you know, okay, we're spending our effort and time, and, you know, doing awareness, but here we are, we're neglecting the survivors who need the help to go through their daily life. That is the situation we're in. We have thousands and thousands of survivors who are going through daily challenges that cannot be met because they were not trained or they were not equipped, they were not prepared to face these challenges. And we are left, you and I, you know, can attest to this. Before the internet, we were looking for a source of information. There's none. There's no government entity, there's no somebody we could run to that caters to brain aneurysm survivors. There's none. Of course, you know, there's MDA, there's all these associations, you know, that are give, you know, pink ribbons, you know, for breast cancer. There are directions to go to, but with brain aneurysms, there's none. Yeah, this Brain Aneurysm Foundation, they have a website. But if you ask them a direct question about, you know, what am I going to do with this, they will direct you to a survivors group or support group in the area. And sometimes they're non-existent. I went to a support group in San Francisco, and it wasn't really conducive to my needs. You know, it doesn't meet my needs. I am not putting down all these foundations, and I'm glad that they exist because they are helping us a lot. But then again, there's really a need, a big need for an entity to go down to the survivors' levels and help out. Because right now, there's not...
I think it's going to come from a grassroots effort of peer-to-peer support, like what you're doing and how we communicate that. I, like you, I'm not going to – in fact, I don't have time now. We're down to 5 minutes. But I'm not going to say anything bad about the organizations. I am going to say that I have had – whether it's TBI, ABI, aneurysm, I've had the president of every organization that there is as a guest on my show. And what I always ask is, how many of us do you have on your board?
Exactly. You got it.
Okay, because the top two people in the organization get a good paycheck, and everybody's got a walk and a cheap, scratchy T-shirt for a run once a year, you know. But how many people who've suffered aneurysm survivors, TBI survivors, stroke survivors, how many of those are on the board of the organization that's representing us? That's the question that I like to ask. Now, it is nice because I am going to, in this last 5 minutes, I'm going to thank everybody. I'm going to thank you. And then I'm just going to play a little snippet going out from one of these organizations, and I'll credit them because it's statistics. As far as peer support, Rico, again, check on my program notes. Look at Rico's link is in my program notes to his support page if you're an aneurysm survivor, caregiver, etc. Brain Injury Radio, we're on 7 nights a week. My regular show is every Wednesday night. Les Paul, who is here tonight, also a brain injury survivor, and Todd, his co-host, on earlier tonight. They're on the first, third, and fifth Tuesday of every month, but you're welcome at any show 7 nights a week for support. And I think it's not going to be that we train these organizations about helping us. I think it's that we're going to shape whatever's going to happen, because the status quo is the status quo. And what I can honestly say is I've learned more from other survivors in the last 6 years than from anyone in the traditional medical model in the almost 2 decades prior to that. And I didn't even know that those organizations existed back in 1995. So God bless them for being there, but none of them did anything for me. I didn't know they existed. So, you know, they weren't communicating with the hospitals around the area, or the hospitals or medical professionals weren't communicating that these places existed. And again, the internet we take for granted now wasn't there then. And so you didn't have any way to find it. But, you know, God bless shows like this, pages like yours, and survivors, all of you that have participated tonight. We do want to do things for the survivors, but tonight's show was about brain aneurysm awareness. I hope you that have been out there listening tonight, I know even us survivors probably learned something from each other tonight. That's why the magic of peer-to-peer support is so powerful and empowering for us. But for the people who've never walked this road, I hope that you learned some things tonight, and I'm going to play out some statistics so that you really know, because you heard some people talk tonight and you might still think, well, that couldn't happen to me, or that can't be that prevalent. I'm going to let you hear some statistics about it as we go out. And in the meantime, peer up with others. Don't look for the organizations to do it for you. Look for other survivors. That's where you're going to learn the most. It's where you're going to get the most support. It's where people are going to understand you the best, and that's going to empower you to be able to go out and get the support you need from others, be that family member, friends, spouses, or weather the storm if those relationships don't work out. Your support is going to be with your peers. Thank you so much, Rico, for helping me put this show together tonight. Love you to death. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay, everybody, and I want to thank everybody who listened tonight and participated in the show. Again, this is Kim Justice on Brain Injury Radio Network. We're going to be in 90 seconds. The live show is going to stop, but I'm going to go ahead and play these statistics. When you play back the show, anybody who's listening from a link somewhere that I posted it today, that link forever belongs to this show. And so a couple hours after we get off the air live here, it's going to be on demand on the same link. So you can replay the show to hear it yourself, share it with someone else. I hope you do share it with someone else. It's the first day of Awareness Month, and I think there's a lot to be learned. The statistics I'm going to play, for those of you who aren't going to be able to hear anything 10 seconds from now, the statistics will be in the show in its entirety without a break when you play it back. We wanted to have a personal aspect of 99% of the show and then just give some factoids behind it on aneurysm for all of those who are not familiar. So I want to thank you all so much for being here, participating, and your support. And special thanks again to Rico and his group for coming tonight, to our own people from Brain Injury Radio who came tonight. Good night. God bless. Have a great long weekend for those of you who are leaving. And if the rest of you who are on the phone have 5 minutes, this is how we'll top the show off with a little more reality. I think what I'm going to do is